Welcome to the Heal, Thrive, Dream podcast, where trauma survivors become healthy thrivers. Each month, we'll feature a theme in the trauma recovery and empowerment field to promote your recovery, healing, and learning how to build dreams. Here's your host, Karen Robinson, transformational coach and therapist.
Hi, everyone. Welcome back to the Heal, Thrive, Dream podcast. Today, our guest is Stefan Neff. Stefan is passionate about demystifying mental health problems and helping the people around him live a life so full of joy that yesterday is jealous of today. That's really cute. Born in Germany, Stefan has studied medicine at the prestigious Heidelberg University before traveling and working around the globe. Nowadays, he has settled down as in, and you all are gonna laugh at me, it's anesthetist. He's one of those fancy doctors and has become a best-selling author and advocate for mental health and addiction. Thank you for being here, Stefan.
It's an absolute honor. And you got it right, anesthetist. I chose the funniest word in the lexicon. I thought, that's what I'm going to be. Okay, I like that. Didn't know how to spell it or pronounce it. I'll become that.
Yeah, thank you. I appreciate that very much. Yeah. So I'm so thrilled that you're here today. As you may or may not know, our podcast listeners are usually women, but we do invite men on the show as well. And I don't know if I have any male listeners or not. I don't know how to find that out, but if you have any ideas on that, let me know. So I love having men on as well, because men have messages too, right? It's a thing where we're all in this together. Men screw up too sometimes, right? Or men have trauma too. Yeah.
I don't know. Can you get the other foot in too? Let me put it like that. Only because I've got a Y chromosome does not exempt me from trauma. On the contrary, actually, yeah. That Y chromosome and the core beliefs and the bullshit that certainly my generation has been fed is hindering us. The Y chromosome somehow doesn't want us to really share our faults. Yeah, most of us have emotions, but many men that these emotions might be hunger and thirst, and that's as far as it goes. And all the rest is being pushed aside, pushed down, take a concrete pill and grow up kind of thing.
I'd be perfect.
And that's the problem for us. So I was not different there. I was never brought up in a life where I was taught to feel my emotions and to deal with my emotions. No, it was, I was born on the wrong side of the tracks. Mm-hmm. Never really thought, and no one really thought that I would make it too much. And against all odds, I actually became quite good at school, and I enjoyed school. But trauma sought me out early, maybe a bit through abandonment, because my mum and my dad divorced when I was four. I lived with my great grandma then. My mum went to work, tried to make ends meet. It was not a rich childhood by any stretch of imagination. It was what it was. Not that at that time I would have thought that there was much trauma there. But then certainly at around age 13, first girlfriend, I was sitting there on a tram stop waiting to drive home one evening when a gang came out of a local pub there and thought they have some fun with me. And so it was a gang assault and I ended up pretty beaten up, no front teeth left and stuff like that. So it was not a nice time. And I had barely healed when I started training martial arts. And I transformed into Rambo pretty quickly. And unfortunately, not just from a physique point of view, but also from a mental being fucked up point of view, there was a good going dose of PTSD going. But at that time, I didn't know about PTSD. I didn't know. And certainly the people around me had no clue. There was no support whatsoever along those lines. So it was just, it was what it was. As a man, you take it and now you become the fighter. And I did. Mm-hmm. And I worked my guts out during the day at school and learned a lot. And then in the evening, I was training. And it was quite a dark life. It was quite hypervigilant, constantly on the go, constantly mm-hmm. go, 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 go. And oh my God, it was.
Was that your main symptom of post-traumatic stress?
I was I brought the guy behind, the gang leader behind bars, and he threatened to kill me once he gets out. So I thought I had 3 years to actually get really good in defending myself. And I did. And I achieved that. But I was constantly on adrenaline, constantly go, 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 go. And that was, you can't sustain that. And it was about 5 years. I had by now finished school. I had excelled at school, was school best, and therefore I could choose where I wanted to go to university. I chose Heidelberg, lovely Heidelberg, which was sort of about 20 k's away from where I lived. And by that time, several things got clear to me. A, the guy will never find me. So as simple as that. So the threat reduced a little bit. Secondly, I discovered alcohol. And I discovered girls. Mm-hmm. And that was actually a very beautiful discovery, because for the first time in 5 years, the alcohol let me relax. Yeah. It came with a sound effect. Oh, that was the sound effect.
Yeah.
Literally, I could feel my muscles relaxing. I remember the first time I had this dopamine rush from alcohol was probably in my first semester. It was summer. We were sitting under this huge oak tree, two friends and me out in a beer garden. We had these big glasses of beer in our hands. And I had finished that first glass or a liter of beer. And I suddenly felt the world opening up. And I felt laughter. I heard myself laughing, and it was the most beautiful sound I could have imagined. So that was beautiful. Oh, it was so beautiful. And that dopamine rush, unfortunately, it was highly, highly addictive. And from now on, that became my go-to. If I was in a good mood, I would drink. If I was in a bad mood, I would drink. And there were times when I didn't drink. So whilst the dopamine rush was there, I was still focused on my studies and was working hard to become a doctor. So fair call. There were times when I drank very little, but boy, when I drank, I drank, and there was no stopping. Having said that, at that time, I was also very much into dancing. I was dancing rock and roll. I was dancing quite athletic dancing. And so probably as much as I've drank, I breathed out the alcohol. Normally your liver metabolizes it. I was breathing it out and sweating it out. And that's probably saving me a little bit. But later on, the physical activity is more or less subsided. And it was far more a life where I escaped, because trauma doesn't just stop. It doesn't just come once in your life. There's other things happen. Other shit happens. And I'd never learned to deal with my negative emotions. I'd never realized them for what they were. And so whenever I felt bad, I was trying to escape. And I became very good in escaping, either with work. That was my go-to during the daytime and the first 16 hours. And then when I couldn't go any further with work, because my head was so spinny, then I did drink. And somewhere in between the girls, you know, you just fit them in where it works. And you can imagine this was not a healthy way of living. This was not a healthy way of coping, because ultimately you only fall back onto that one coping mechanism. And sooner or later, that friend of alcohol, that beautiful helper that escaped you, that helped you escape your reality, that helped you to relax, that helped you to become more the soul of the party. I was probably quite an introvert. I was probably quite shy.
It's hard to imagine that.
Honestly, it was. I couldn't probably string two sentences together, because I had always this kind of weird certain way you have to be, and I was never that way, whatever that way was. So I felt out of place, so to speak. I felt awkward, and when the alcohol was there, I didn't give a fuck anymore.
Well, it was your best
And I
friend.
would, exactly. And I got the guitar out and I played, and I probably didn't play so well, and I certainly didn't sing so well, but it was like moths to a flame. The girls were attracted from around, and that was just cool, you know? So the alcohol very much served a need and served me as a friend.
Yeah.
From a sexuality point of view, it made me relaxed. It also gave me an erection that at one stage I could control with the amount of alcohol. So it was basically, you would like to make 2 hours of love? We can do that. And girls would love. And then after an hour, she would say, oh, for crying out loud, get on with it. Something like that. But it was that. It was such a beautiful relationship between alcohol and me. It's maybe not surprising that I relied so much on it later on. But of course, I never learned to do anything else.
No other coping skills.
That's right. And because I was working so hard and then drinking and then that's about it, I've lost myself.
Mm-hmm.
I lost myself as a man and I lost myself as a human being. So whilst I took on more and more roles, that of a husband, that of a father, that of whatever else, if you asked me, who are you? I would have had no answer. I would have said, yeah, I'm a doctor. But as a man, I didn't understand the question. And
Did you really drink all through your college and medical school and all that?
Oh, drink through? Well, define that. I mean, there would be nights that I learned till midnight and there would be no alcohol, and maybe days and weeks without alcohol. And okay. There would be other times when alcohol was absolutely yes. Thank you.
So you felt you could control it a little bit?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Okay. There was no issue of not controlling it. At least not no awareness of it. There were days when I didn't go to a lecture until lunchtime because I was still recovering from the night before. But that was typically rather a cool night and a bit of a smile on my face when I remember that night rather than the negative side of it. Mm. I was not yet failure? Shall I say there was not yet the evil twins of shame and guilt riding me every day. It was still a cool dude with dreams and a man who is going out there and taking the world by his balls. That is how I saw myself. I was a self-made man. No one in my family had gone to university. No one had been involved in martial arts or any kind of the things that I did. I studied circus arts for a year. I did all kind of things which were really, really cool. So for a while, that sustained me. Hey, yeah, cool. I could dance rock and roll, not bad. I mean, athletic kind of, you know, girl in the air for a bit and then comes back down. And then we do other things kind of stuff. Cool. But that subsides. Sometimes life just interferes. Guess what they did with me? And before long, it had been 5 years since I was dancing, and before long it had been 10 years since I've been juggling and those kind of things. And so sooner or later I was just work and overwhelmed with all the other roles that I had to do, with then the additional traumas thrown in, moving countries for career purposes, finding my wife, moving with her to another country, then pregnancy, chaos, postnatal depression in her, all that. It was madness. It was just one trauma after the other. And she mm-hmm. was as broken as I was. Mm-hmm. So she was relying on the alcohol just as much as I.
So both of you brought baggage into the relationship.
Shit, yeah. Mm-hmm. And we were broken. I mean, with how nowadays we can see it. Then, we were fighting like, my goodness. And it was completely, she pushed my triggers and I pushed her triggers. And within 2-3 sentences from hello, I'm home to, it took us, we were masters in escalation. And it was crazy. And that was because, I don't know, so many wrong core beliefs, so many misunderstandings, so much inability to explain your own feelings. And just you simply, I was like Pavlov's dog. Honestly, you ring a bell and I start to drool. She looks at me in a certain way. I start to fight. And it's just unbelievable with hindsight. That was how broken I was. And the alcohol helped me. But sooner or later, it was, nah, there is only so much work you can do. There's only so many bottles of vodka you can drink. And I came to a point where there was not enough vodka in this world to take the pain away.
So vodka was your drink of choice?
Oh, vodka, no, my drink of choice would have been wine, but you smell that. Vodka, you don't smell so much.
Okay.
So I was able to hide the vodka. Of course.
Yeah.
That was the very first game we played in rehab. What is the best place to hide your bottle? Okay. So that's always a good one. An icebreaker amongst alcoholics kind of thing. So yeah. Or the other one is good. The other one really good is, you know, what are your liver function tests? Oh, no, that's rookie numbers. My GGT. But I'm jumping the gun a bit.
What was the straw that broke the camel's back? Was it another trauma or just all these little T's stacking up? When did you finally decide I can't keep drinking like this?
Well, first of all, like every good alcoholic, you try to moderate. And you don't drink on the weekend, only during the week, or you don't drink during the week, but only on the weekend. We don't drink beer, but only wine. We don't drink schnapps, but we only take whatever. So we try everything. And guess what? Nothing works. Because one drink is too many and 1,000 not enough. And that is the reality of living the life of an alcoholic. So there were times.
No drugs.
Luckily, I never got into that scene. We got drugs in a good way. For every year, for 3-4 years in a row, on my birthday in August, we would in Germany travel to Holland, to Amsterdam, and the only thing we would drink there would be champagne. We had seafood and had joints. So that was a beautiful weekend. But we celebrated that, and that was actually nice times.
Mm-hmm.
But I never really got into the drug scene in any other way than those memorable weekends.
Well, what stopped you, though? Because at times when the alcohol wasn't effective, did it ever go there?
I guess at the time when I was, maybe when my friends were sort of dabbling or bringing sort of the odd LSD or something like that to a party, I was quite happy with the alcohol. And that was still the time when I was dancing, when I was out there, and you would find me on a dance floor. Hell, I would break my dance partner, take the next one and get going. And it was so much activity there that often there was not really a temptation to do anything silly. Maybe that was my blessing, with hindsight. Maybe it was also lack of availability. I was never at parties where cocaine was snorted up, the snozzle. It was just, we had fun with alcohol. We had, I don't think responsible fun. I wouldn't call it like that. but there was a sort of an honor code there, with the people that I surrounded myself. We did a lot of interesting things and adventurous things, let's put it like that. We would all look out for each other. We would treat women with respect. There was never a dark side to the alcohol in my younger years.
Interesting.
Later on, that dark side came, but it was more self-destructive rather than actually beating someone up or getting in trouble with the law. It was more the self-destruction, the self-loathing, the shame, the guilt that came with it, the constant hiding. Oh, I was hiding in the morning that I was hiding that I was hungover. Yeah. I was hiding that I was during the day that I bought the alcohol. I was hiding the alcohol. I was hiding the drinking. All the hiding. God.
Exhausting.
Exactly. Oh, I hated it. Mm-hmm.
What was that last straw? Thing.
There was no last straw. It just kept deteriorating until One night I was sitting, sobbing, crying my eyes out in the garage, drunk like a skunk, and just suffering in mental pain. It was around about the time my parents had rotted away from cancer. And it was just a lot of things came together. And I was just down and out. And my
suicidal
wife,
thoughts?
Oh, always. Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Oh, yeah.
And any attempts? Sorry, I'm a therapist.
Negative.
You know.
No. Okay. No. It is. I could never make it look like an accident in the past. So I think that stopped me. That was the only thing. Would I have otherwise pulled through? I'm not sure. Suicidal thoughts, definitely. In my darkest hours, absolutely. And that's the crazy thing. Because nowadays, I know that depression and addiction lied to me. They were bloody liars.
They are.
There is hope. There is help. But I couldn't see it. I thought I'm all alone. No one could possibly feel like I do. No one could possibly imagine the things I have done. Now, and it's those kind of voices. God.
How did you get them to cease? Or have they ceased at all?
I needed that night, my wife couldn't go any further. And she actually called the boss of my department. And he saw me in all my glory there. And by the time I had woken up the next morning from my alcohol stupor, they had behind my back organized an admission to a rehab hospital. And it was beautiful because my wife and I had always been fighting. And she was drinking like a fish and then stopped about 3 years before me. And during those 3 years, the pendulum swung the other way. In other words, she was a rabid anti-alcoholicer. We had fights, bad. But instead of fighting with me the next morning, they all came in, lay next to me in a bed and said, "Hey, we love you." And that was a Wednesday morning. And Friday morning, we're going to drive to Auckland and you're going to be admitted to an hospital.
Wow.
And this love, the absence of aggression, the absence of fighting, completely disarmed me. And
she changed your pattern.
Correct. She changed her pattern, I guess, in the first instance.
Yeah.
But we didn't realize about all that. Whatever she did, she was the biggest, she shot me the biggest sign of love. But certainly we were also under financial strain around at that time, which certainly didn't help. And we didn't have money. So the 1 month rehab was 27,000. And that was a stiff price. I had no idea how to pay it. And Lisa organized a loan from the bank, was very open with them, said, "Hey, you know, we want to get him into rehab." Bank supported us.
Does that mean you only had to go to rehab once, or did you have, did you relapse?
That's two different questions. There should be three questions. How many times did you go to rehab? Did you relapse? Did you lapse? So let's do them in that sequence. How many times in rehab? Once. 28 days and the best 28 days in my life. Because what I got out of that were so many lessons that I learned, so many mirrors people held in front of my face, I was given so many opportunities to grow and to have new insights and to recognize what was going on deep inside myself, which was driving me to drink, which was driving me to do self-destructive behaviors. That was beautiful and was incredibly painful at the time, but it was gorgeous. So that was 28 days. And I mean, in all fairness, would I go back? Drop of a hat. In a heartbeat, would I go back? Because this would have been the best 28 days possible. Nowadays, I'll do
other... You didn't have to hide anymore.
Oh, of course. And that was so beautiful. Hi, I'm Stefan. I'm an alcoholic. The moment those words came across my mouth, you couldn't shut me up. For a week, I was talking to anyone and everyone. And it was beautiful. But also after the first week, I realized that actually every single person I interacted with in that rehab, they all had been addicts, bar one or two of the doctors. Everyone else there was in that chair themselves several years before that. And therefore, you can't bullshit a bullshitter.
Right.
It was so beautiful. It was so wonderful. And they all seemed to have gotten their act together. And there were so many lessons I had to learn, but they guided me. And it was the most beautiful thing. So everyone, as far as I'm concerned, every 16-year-old, mandatory 4 weeks rehab. Okay. I don't care where, what, how, but a rehab, such a rehab as I had. There's so many different rehabs out there. Let's be clear about that. Okay. Sure. There are some rehabs that are more prison systems than anything else. What I had was all about healing, all about growth, all about recognizing what's going on and establishing new patterns that are sustainable. And that was beautiful. Oh, for that, I'm so grateful to these guys. Now, so that was once in rehab. Mm-hmm. How many times did I lapse? Lapse being defined as having a drink or 10, but not relapsing into your old pattern of behavior. So you drank, but it's not that we're now hiding it, lying about it, etc. But you actually got pissed and your wife typically finds out, and she did. And so when I had my lapse in the first year, again, she showed me love. And I expected, oh my God. Well, I beat myself up.
I expected an ass kicking. You didn't have that.
No. And that's what I expected. But she knew that I was already giving myself that ass kicking in my head. I was beating myself up for that. You fucking failure. You have no idea how I talked about to myself. Mm-hmm. And she said instead, okay, let's figure out what went wrong. Why did you go there? What happened? And for me, it was always halt. H-A-L-T, hungry, angry, lonely, tired. These were powerful triggers for me. Mm-hmm. Any one of them makes me vulnerable. Two, give me three of them and, oh, I want to drink. Give me four of them at the same time. And certainly in my first year, I would have seen that glass in front of me with condensation running down. I would see this beautiful amber liquid in there. I could smell the Chardonnay. So that was how powerful it was. So therefore, we figured out where did I fall down. And surprise, surprise, I hadn't looked after myself. And it's an ongoing journey because yes. I am still guilty as charged. I work far too hard. I don't put enough breaks in. And I'm just self-destructive still because I always go on 105%. 120 if I could. Okay. That's me. That's my natural go, go, go. Mm-hmm. And I love it. But if I don't put the brakes on and actually implement times where my parasympathetic nervous system can actually heal my body, where I take the sympathetic system out of the equation, man, if I don't do that regularly, I pay the price big time.
And what does that something look like? Do you have medical problems because of it? Mental health? Spiritual?
It's boom and bust. It's the spiritual. Typically, that's I'm getting more angry. I'm losing empathy. And that's when you're sitting with a patient and the patient suddenly gives you a whine about his life and you're tempted to say, you think that's a problem? You let me talk. Let me teach you about my problems. Okay. Once you come to that point, alarm bells. Okay. You need a holiday.
So you thought this, you didn't say it, right?
I never, well, from now on then I say it. But then these people have actually deserved it. Remember, there's just, you know, there's some people in this world who are just assholes. And from now on then you have to be honest with them as well. Okay. But in general terms, no, I'm prone to boom and bust. No two ways around it. Mm-hmm. And one of the challenges for me nowadays is to create those healthy habits, to make sure that I eat healthy and regularly, that I rehydrate, that I drink. Cheers. That I empty my bladder. Really? All that. Yeah, well, let's actually drink. We need to hydrate.
I have both sparkling water and regular water here with me.
See, no, that's my point. You need to look after yourself. And often we only pay lip service here. And that is
guilty as charged. Yeah.
Exactly. And we are all guilty. So therefore, it is an ongoing journey for me to improve myself. And that's where I wrote my steps to sobriety. Is that I was blessed with a 12-step program that the rehab that I used, or I was admitted to, they used that program. Now, in my book here, I might teach you a bit of, or I'll tell you a bit about my story, but I'm also going through the 12 steps and put them into layman's terms or into terms that maybe are less God-related, but more in the sense of a failing business. How would you help someone who is in the same work as you are? Let's say you have a restaurant, he has got a restaurant, and yours is great and his is lousy. And he might come to you and say, well, actually, you know, I don't understand it. What are you doing that I don't do? And can you help me? And what would happen? Well, you would say, yeah, of course I can. Mm-hmm. What would you do? You would come across and probably sit in his restaurant, order a few things from the menu, look around, see what the staff is doing, see what the decor is like, have a look at the menu, have a look at, and then taste the food, and then probably go behind the scenes and do a good inventory, actually check out what's going on, figure out what is selling, what doesn't sell, where is your shopping, and you know, all the kind of things that you would look at specifically for the restaurant. And then you would probably change the menu, throw those things out that are not selling, maybe put a different theme in there, so make improvements. Then you might wish to actually talk to your consumers, to your customers, and to your loyal customers and say, hey guys, still same management, but we are changing our flair. And for your loyalty, we want to say thank you to you. Maybe apologize that the last time the food was not so great. So therefore, 30% off for your next visit. So you're making amends. And then you're actually doing a quality assurance program. Make sure that you actually, things are getting better. Let's stay on track. And then down the line, your friend's restaurant is booming, yours is booming, and he has had such an amazing transformation and such a beautiful journey that he now says, you know what? God, I didn't see what can be done. Guess what I do? On a Monday night when we're closed, I open up for other restaurant owners and we have the dinner here behind the scenes where restaurant owners can exchange ideas and talk and debrief, etc.
So you started a support group for other doctors? I'm trying to read in between the lines here.
No, my point is, that is what I've described to you is a very logical thing that any one of you out there would do with a friend who has got a failing business. Now, that is the 12-step program in a nutshell. So it's nothing mystical where you need to climb mountains and do yoga poses. No, it's very logical. And that's for that I loved it. But part of it is creating new habits, healthy habits, habits that are sustainable. And you're learning to live your life to the fullest. You're learning to live intentionally in your life. And that's where the magic happens, by you implementing new habits that put smiles on your face. Rather than those habits that make you shudder with shame and guilt. And that's the amazing thing. So that's where I want to invite you all guys out there to come along this journey. It is kind of like a school where you learn to live. That is what recovery is all about. And recovery is a typical word that is used for addiction. But I could also say mental well-being, because virtually all the things that help someone recover and where you need to focus upon, they are also the foundation for a healthy mind, healthy soul, healthy brain. So if we can... Touché. So it's all of that, put it all together and actually start working on it. But it is work, but it's a beautiful work. It's demanding, but it's so gratifying when you actually stop for a moment on your journey and look back and think, wow, how far have I come? And that's something I don't do enough.
Well,
to
do it.
To, you know, to actually do the wins, celebrate the wins.
Mm-hmm.
That is, I still want to keep going, keep going, keep going.
Yeah.
But it's, I forget that the beauty does not lie at the end of the race. It's actually the race.
Journey. Yeah.
The journey. Is
do you
the,
have your
is
iPhone?
Beauty.
Do you have your iPhone handy?
Yes, I have.
Okay. Go to the notes page.
Uh-huh.
Entitle it My Wins.
My Wins.
And as you have them, write them there. And then on a really shitty day where you feel like garbage, read those over and over out loud.
Ha, 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 ha. Nice. I like.
So for the person listening who doesn't know what we're talking about when we talk about positive coping skills or healthy skills or healthy habits, what were your go-tos and why were they your go-tos?
First of all, I think where you need to start off with is learning your feelings and literally learning how to feel what is going on. Because as an addict, as an alcoholic, you're running away from your feelings. You hate those feelings, and therefore you do everything to numb them or escape them.
How do you find them? How do you find them after cutting them off for so long? Where do you get them?
You need to be in you need to be in a tribe, of people who are a bit further down the line and who know which kind of exercises to do with you. And when I was in rehab, the most dreaded minute of the day was 10 o'clock a.m. In the morning, when we sat around in a circle. The rules were nothing in your hands, no hat, no sunglasses, no nothing. And it was the whole thing was called feelings.
Oh, geez.
And it was
brutal.
And the guy said nothing. And that was basically his role. And sooner or later, it was such a leaden silence that someone said something. And then someone else retorted. And it was bizarre. And someone said, you ate all the cookies last night and in the lounge room. And I hated what you do. And there were tears and joy and laughter and crying and all kind of weird waves of neurochemicals washing over you. And that was bizarre. So that was actually feeling those emotions and not running away from them. So that was bizarre. Then the next step there, the habit is to actually think through where are these emotions coming from?
Mm-hmm.
What core beliefs are underlying there? So the habit there is that you actually start maybe journaling, but not just write a little diary or so, but rather actually go through this a stepwise approach. In my case, the 12 steps. And step four is taking a brutal inventory of yourself. And that goes into depth. It can be fun for a little while, but for example, you make all these lists and there's a rage or anger list. Who are the people who angered you? Who you resent? Oh, that's cool. And then you write three columns. So Joe did that to me and that's how it made me feel. You can really let rip, and then you just keep filling these lines. And sooner or later, as someone who has been further down the line than you will come back to that page and will draw a fourth column in there where it is your contribution.
Ouch.
Exactly. How did you fit into all that?
What's your role?
Exactly. Oh, ouch. Suddenly you have to actually take responsibility for your actions. Ooh, not something that we take lightly as an alcoholic. Sorry, I'm running away. Oh no, there's nowhere to run to. Shit. And that is the amazing thing. So habits, those habits that I formed early was, I guess, no longer to run, but actually to stop procrastinating and actually address my demons and learn about my soul, or the lack thereof, however you want to look at it.
Oh, I'm not going to believe that.
There is, so that's the core thing to do. There are other habits, but those habits are, in comparison, easy, that you get up at a consistent time. Mm-hmm. Because as an alcoholic, you want to sleep in. There is no responsibility for you. No, you get up at 7 and you actually brush your teeth and you actually make yourself breakfast. And then 8 o'clock your day starts.
And routines.
Indeed, establishing healthy routines where indeed you start looking after yourself. And that includes some healthy nutrition. As you're starting learning about the cooking, I had a head start there. I loved cooking. And as a doctor, I knew everything about nutrition. Did I eat healthy? But I was in the middle of my depression and my alcohol, for crying out loud. I sprinkled some cheese on the wine and that was my lunch, you know, kind of stuff. For crying out loud. So create healthy habits. But if you only do healthy habits, then it's nothing else than a plaster. It's nothing else on a festering sore. No, healthy habits alone will not do something. It's the same like positive thinking. If you actually have to actively, positively think. And that's quite nice when everything is all right. But when shit hits the fan, then this having to focus on actively positive thinking. And it's the same with other things. You need to address the problems underneath there. Yeah. That doesn't mean to say that those establishing the other healthy habits will not compound and work together. Because every single step you take, you actually realize that you're doing that for yourself. And therefore, your self-esteem grows. Therefore, your chest puffs up just a little bit more, because you now have had, you just made yourself a really nice, healthy breakfast. And it was even tasty. And you think, well, that's nice. Okay. Win. There you go. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And that's the cool thing. So habits will be your best friend, but there's more to it. It's not just eat healthy and your life will be all beautiful. Where's the stress coming from? Where's the anxiety coming from? Where's the depression coming from? These all messages from your body and from your soul. And you need to explore that. Mm-hmm. And
did you do that in therapy?
Yes, to a degree, I did that. But it's more, healing comes in layers. As just as much as trauma comes in layers. There will be times in your life when you're working towards becoming a better human being that therapy and you exploring the past will make a lot of sense. There are other times when you will focus on a different set of skills or a different focus in your life where you maybe are thinking about more dreams, about a goal setting and creating such a crystal clear vision of the future that there is no other way than you actually achieving that vision, because you've changed your dream into a vision that now becomes a mission the moment you take action. So that's a beautiful thing. Therapy has no role in that. Therapy is sort of looking back where you came from. There's time for both of that. Both mm-hmm. of that needs to happen. And I use how shall I say that? It is good to look back and understand where you came from. Understand that there's maybe the history of genetic predisposition. Maybe, yes, great. The whole family on that side were alcoholics. The whole family on that side were depressives. Great. Hey, fantastic. You will have the genes, the genetic predisposition you're more likely to suffer from both of these diseases. Does that mean to say that it will happen? No.
You're not
because it's a choice. Mm-hmm. You have to actively choose to be depressed. You have to be actively choose to follow the addiction. Or you could any moment now choose to move away from those things. You can choose to go for a walk and maybe take a deep breath in for the anxiety rather than numb it with a shot of vodka. You can choose to do some stretching exercises or yoga or breathing techniques, whatever it is, something that stimulates your parasympathetic nervous system and allows your body to heal. That's your choice. So there's genetic predisposition. There is choices to be made. And I think look back, understand where you came from, because that's a huge thing. That was so beautiful for me, because I realized, okay, now I understand why I do what I do. But
there's clues there.
But just to stop there. Okay, now I know. Now what? So now that's where the habits come in, and that's where then the choices come in. And I think it's that intentional living that I invite you all to consider. Right now, you have a choice to make, and you're making it because you're watching this show, you're listening to this beautiful show. And thereafter, once you switch off, you've got another choice to make. Do you want to maybe have a glass of water and rehydrate? Cool, looking after yourself. Or what else do you want to do? So you have choices to make. And I often say it that the power of the choice does not lie in huge choices. You don't need to move mountains. You need to be consistent, and you need to try to figure out who you want to be when you grow up. And I think that's the thing. There's the principle of the 5-minute gardener. So if you have a garden and you were to spend every day 5 minutes in your garden, never more, never less. 5 minutes, go out there. One day you weed, next day you prune a little bit, next day you do this, that. Could you imagine that maybe within a period of a week, you would see changes? Maybe over 3-4 weeks, your family and your neighbors will see changes. Could you imagine that after 3 months, your garden is processing so much food for you, and people will stop in their car and think, bloody hell, what a cool garden. And that's just 5 minutes, regular 5 minutes. Now imagine you do that with your relationship. 5 minutes every day, never more, never less. Can you imagine that your wife, husband, significant other will feel different? They will probably think, what the hell is happening here? There is something. What have you done? But, you know, this is intentional living. So what is your dream? How does that dream really look like in reality? So that's the vision. And then what steps do you need to take? And actually take them consistently. Baby steps, but combine them with healthy habits. And suddenly you also take steps in other directions, like building up resilience. Lots of these catchwords that is probably a bit overused, but bottom line is, how do you deal with adversity? Adversity? Yeah, that's the word. When shit hits the fan. Yeah, when shit hits the fan, what do you do? Okay, and you can practice that, but you can only practice that when you actually have looked after your foundations. It's no good to think, oh, I want to spiritually enlightened, when you're actually hungry, angry, lonely, tired. Remember those kind of halt, and remember the foundations. Yeah, exactly. So therefore, now learn how to live, and suddenly the need to drink will be less and less and less, because you're actually busy living such a beautiful life that indeed you're focused on living rather than focused on escaping your life.
That was beautiful. Now that you've written your book, and I saw that on the show notes that I'm going to use, you have a prolific publishing list. What's next for you? What will we see you do next?
holding myself accountable. I think that was the next thing, because I was losing myself a little bit. So I joined certain tribes where I hold myself as a businessman accountable to others. So I'm talking about my dreams and my goals, for example, to grow my show. And so other people are saying, cool, now that's a nice dream. Now tell us, what are you doing? Okay, so you do that. And by when? By next Wednesday? Cool. We hold you accountable for that. Okay. And so I've started putting systems into place that help me achieve my goals. So, and that is actually something new. That's only something I've started now half a year, three quarters of a year ago. And it is a beautiful thing to hold yourself accountable, help others hold themselves accountable. So it's a great teamwork, something like that. With that, I want to grow my show. I want to be, have a platform where I can bring beautiful people on, such as you, Karen. Guys, what you don't know, Karen is actually coming as a guest on my show. We have done a recording already. Yes.
That's so awesome. Yeah.
Exactly. So here we are. So I want to have more wonderful people on my show who are willing to be authentic and honest and open, transparent, and share the lessons they learned the hard way. So I want to have more of that. I'm writing two books, or sort of coming in the closing of the books. And I had focused on depression there because it's a nasty, nasty disease. So I've got 16 female storytellers and 16 male storytellers who are sharing their story, their unique stories with depression. And yet when you read all these stories, you see commonalities, you see things that sort of the kind of similar suffering, the similar responses that are off flow-on effects that come from living a life in the darkness. It's actually beautiful, and it hopefully invites other people out there to open up about their own struggles. It's okay
to get my hands
okay.
on it.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
It's okay not to be okay.
It's okay
and
not to be okay.
As I said earlier in the interview, depression lied to me. And that's exactly the title of the female book. So it is such a liar, depression. So that is the focus, or was the focus this year. So these two books. I have got ideas for a TED Talk. Time is flying, not just
yes.
tonight, but also also in the sense of I realize it's just September, nearly September. So therefore, I think I need now to book for next year my TED Talk. And that's okay.
That's
but
okay. Yeah.
I am growing. Mm-hmm. And I think that's the key thing. I'm growing. There will be new projects. There will be new things coming along. I have got ideas for symposiums, for just bringing people together and making this world a better place. I strongly believe that we can do that by yes. looking after ourselves and in turn becoming maybe the light in the darkness of those people immediately around us. And then maybe reaching a bit further and getting a snowball effect so that the next person becomes the light in the darkness, maybe of their little ball or sphere of influence. We can do that, guys.
That's right.
Let's not give up. There is the past does not equal the future. And there is hope out there. Very much so. So go out there, guys, and seek the help that you deserve. Mm-hmm. And open up, share, and stop catastrophizing. Stop the hiding. There's so many bad habits that we made our norm. Find your tribe. Open up and surround yourself with new people who have gone through the same trauma as you, but who are now willing to show you how they got to where they were and or where they are now from where they were. And how beautiful will that be?
Yeah.
So yeah, come along for the ride, guys. It's an amazing ride. Mental well-being and recovery from addiction is wow. Not for the faint-hearted, but
yeah.
That's so is life.
Well, that was very helpful for everyone to hear. As some of you know listening, I have a women's trauma recovery group called This Is Us. Healing from trauma together. I actually plan to start a group for men as well. I work a lot with men in individual therapy, a lot of combat vets, active military. So I know there's tons of trauma with men and some men are ready to talk about it. Mm. So that group will be coming within the next couple of years, I have a few things to work on before I can go in that direction. But there is such a need, you know, so male, female listening, if you're hurting, reach out. Just reach out. There's help.
Oh, and if you guys wanted to know a little bit more about what I'm doing, maybe just go to www.mystepstosobriety.com, all written in one word, mystepstosobriety.com. And that's a good hub for which you from which you can explore my show, from which you can explore my books. I've written a children's book, and there was certainly next year there will be volume 2, 3, 4 coming out. So I'm looking forward to more photography and working with my co-author there. So there's a lot of things that I'm involved in. So check it all out, and have fun and go out there and make this life your life. Okay, it is wonderful.
We have one life.
Thank you. Look, honestly, thank you so much for having me as a guest on your show, Karen. I'm truly honored. It's so beautiful that you have got this platform, that you created this platform to help others make sense out of their trauma and heal and thrive. Oh, that's beautiful. We need more of
and
you.
Dream.
And dream, absolutely. And we need more of you. So please clone yourself, Karen. And do.
Well, same. I don't know how you fit it in everything you're doing. It's amazing. So same. It's a real pleasure having you.
Absolutely. Thank you so much. Look after yourself.
Thank you for listening in today. Please join us next week, same day and time. Also, I would love for you to check out my website, healthrivedream.com.